Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. If you want to visit us out on the web, go into Google and type in Ohio Exopolitics. You'll see the main site, which is exopoliticsohio.us, and you'll probably get a link to the Blog Talk site as well. I'm speaking with you this morning on the Blog Talk site, and we're also broadcasting on Revolution Radio at 8 p.m. Eastern this evening. And I have a couple of guests on. We're going to talk about some very interesting topics. This morning we're going to talk about what I think is the most important and interesting topic, which is the human mind. And Billy, of course, if you've listened to this radio show at all, you know a lot of my shows are done about the writings of Edward Albert Meyer, who is a farmer in Switzerland. I think he's 78 years old now. He lives in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidt-Ruti. And he's written 39 books. One of these books is called Might of the Thoughts, or Macht der Gedanken in the German. Billy writes his books in German, and then they are translated by translators all over the world. And the German is published right on the previous page. So you can see the German, and then you can see the English on the following page. There's an evolutive code that's found in the German language, because the German language corresponds very much to the old Lyrian language. In fact, the German language, I believe, developed out of the old Lyrian language. Lyrians were extraterrestrial humans who came here about 389,000 years ago and settled for a while here on the Earth, a story we've talked about before. Billy's spirit form, according to these extraterrestrials, is very ancient. And he was trained for this mission here to bring out these teachings starting when he was a small child, for 11 years by an extraterrestrial human man named Svath, for 11 years by another extraterrestrial human named Asket. And then the plan was for an additional 11 years of training from a woman named Semyase, who was an extraterrestrial woman. That contact got cut short because of a health problem with Semyase. But Billy has written over 600 contacts. There are contact notes, and you can see those out on the Future of Mankind site. The books are much more difficult to get a hold of. You'll have to go to one of the FIGU sites or try to contact Michael Horn. Sometimes he'll sell books. You can get them out on the FIGU sites. I have not gotten any that way yet, but that'll be my next step. Anyway, on to the content. The Might of the Thoughts books is dedicated to a humankind that's ill in its consciousness, so we can find our way back to a creational, natural way of living and thinking. There's a German word called Ersatzung. Ersatzung, which means to get very badly out of control of the good human nature. And many of us here on the earth are badly out of control of our good human natures. And that comes down to the thinking. And we need to learn to analyze our thoughts. Our thoughts are much like a garden, our consciousness is, and we need to clarify those good, healthy, positive thoughts, nurture positive thoughts, so that they can become more valuable, more purposeful, more productive, If you don't, you'll have weeds that sprout up in your consciousness, wildly growing negative thoughts, which go in a vicious cycle. Lower thoughts lead to lower feelings, lead to lower habits, lead to lower circumstances. And that pattern is an unconscious pattern, which goes on a lot of times. We don't even realize when we're doing it. And then we have these wildly growing weeds in our consciousness, wildly growing thoughts that are very, very destructive. Our thoughts develop their own life, much like plants do. And our life is the result of our thoughts. In other words, if you have good, positive, healthy, neutralized, neutral, balanced thinking, you will have healthier circumstances in your life. You'll have healthier feelings in your life. You'll make better decisions. And your whole life will be blessed if your thoughts are neutral, positive, not overly positive. Positive thinking in itself is also a road to destruction, because we should have a balance to our thoughts. They should be balanced and slightly skewed towards the positive. If you let your thoughts become negative, you will fall prey to your own negativity, and you can develop psychical disorders, insanity. You'll be subject to what's called the rotation of negativity. It's like a vicious cycle where these negative thoughts, they come back over and over and over again. So if you have a repeating thought, chances are it might be a negative one. Usually, these negative thoughts repeat on their own. And we have to be very, very conscious of that. In Might of Thoughts book, page 28, it says, consequently, the human being is shaken and knocked about by the circumstances of his or her life as long as he or she believes himself or herself to be a helpless creature who is subject to external conditions and influences. Well, we're not helpless creatures. What is a circumstance? A circumstance is the existing condition or state of affairs, excuse me, surrounding and affecting someone. Examples of conditions would include a state of being, a state of health, your social position. The Mind of the Thoughts book explains that we are actually the Lord and Master of our lives. Every human being that learns to practice self-cognition and takes up self-examination and lets the appropriate self-control grow, learns that they are actually in control of their life. And self-cognition means knowing oneself. Because that which you think, you will make real. So you have to have good and positive thoughts. They must be tended and nurtured. And the human being should have it also a good and positive opinion of yourself. Now, to nurture, remember, we should be nurturing these neutral positive thoughts. Nurture means to feed and protect. Nurture can also mean to support, to encourage, as just like during a training period, a development, a fostering. It means to train, to educate. So we have to train ourselves to nurture these good, positive thoughts. As a noun, nurture is the act of promoting the development of something, like promoting the development of a child. In the Old French, nurture meant nourishment, education, training. Actually, when I was doing the study for the word nurture in the German, one of the words that came up as kind of a synonym was cherish. And I like the idea of cherishing healthy, good thoughts. To cherish means to hold something dear. Now, on page 32 of the Might of the Thoughts book, it says, if a human being becomes a criminal, a felon, a miser, they become depraved, virtuous, jealous, vengeful, or they become a hater, and so forth, then he or she has already maintained those corresponding thoughts in his or her consciousness for a long time. And our thinking can become imprisoned, especially if we're addicted to something. And these thoughts rotate around in what's almost like an everlasting cycle, which has no end. And that's because, believe it or not, this is a stunner for me, much of our thoughts are unconscious. And I'm going to play a little bit of a clip here that talks about the unconscious mind.
Can you still understand this alphabet soup? Most people can. Your brain automatically puts the letters back in the correct order. Something in your head navigates you through the everyday adventures of modern life. Something that decides things for you before you can think about it. Because your brain is always on automatic.
We're driven by our unconscious mind. Isn't that the interesting thing? So much of what we do is unconscious. The decisions we make are almost dictated to us. I often wonder who's in charge here. You know, who's running the show? How much control do we really have?
Unconscious influences are there everywhere. And as research progresses, it's never going the other way. It's not saying, oh, we used to think these things were all unconscious. Now we find out they're conscious. It's exactly the opposite. All these things we thought, because we thought everything was conscious, smaller, 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 smaller. It's become the incredible shrinking little man in the head.
There's all sorts of gaps in our perception and outright confabulations that our brains are making for us in order for us to exist, because it's easier to do that than actually to try and make an accurate representation of the world. It's faster and easier for us to estimate what the world's going to look like because it usually works just fine.
However, some people are out to fool us on purpose. People like Apollo Robbins, a magician, and the gentleman thief of the desert town Las Vegas. Apollo not only deceives our eyes, but more importantly, our brains.
Anyway, I wanted to give an example there that many, many of the thoughts that we have are actually unconscious, which sheds a whole different light on things, particularly when it comes to addictions. An addiction is a chronic brain disease that causes compulsive substance use despite harmful consequences. Health, our finances, our relationships, our careers can be ruined. One example is the abuse of drugs and alcohol. What happens is these lower thoughts that we have lead to lower feelings, and the lower feelings lead to lower habits like drinking too much. And drinking too much leads to lower circumstances in our life. An addiction is a state characterized by a compulsive engagement in rewarding stimuli despite advanced consequences. So let me talk a little bit about what are called these reward pathways in the brain. We have a mesolimbic dopamine system, which detects rewarding stimulus. And under normal conditions, the circuit controls an individual's responses to natural rewards like food, sex, social interactions. But this reward stimulus that we're getting from this addictive behavior, whatever your particular addiction happens to be, can be an important determinant in our motivation and our incentive. Now, on the Might of Books, Might of Thoughts page, Might of Thoughts, page 44, it talks about thinking being imprisoned by an addiction. And our thinking can become imprisoned even if we're not addicted, because our thinking can rotate around in an everlasting cycle which has no end. The rule, now believe it or not, is that the human being does not think consciously, but largely unconsciously. Consequently, the human being is almost always the unconscious cause of our circumstances. We don't realize it, but unconsciously, we're causing these negative circumstances in our life. The unconscious is the part of the mind that is inaccessible to the conscious mind, but that affects behavior and emotions. The unconscious mind consists of processes in the mind that occur automatically and are not available to introspective. So our unconscious mind has the ability to actually cause the circumstances in our life. Empirical evidence suggests that unconscious phenomena include repressed feelings, automatic skills. For example, I think a musician develops automatic skills no matter what your instrument is. When you play, it's automatic. It's almost unconscious. Subliminal perceptions, thoughts, habits, automatic reactions. We have all kinds of automatic reactions. For example, look at the difference between feelings and emotions. Emotions are reflexive. They happen automatically, and they can be very powerful, and they can tend to get out of control. But the Meyer information explains that thoughts usually create feelings, and that feelings are something that comes on slowly because of thoughts. So these emotions that can pop up uncontrollably can be very dangerous, and we need to recognize when our thoughts get out of balance and when these emotions explode upward. And furthermore, and this is from page 44 as well, and furthermore, it is a fact that while the human being wants the good and the positive, he / she constantly prevents exactly the achievement of the good and the positive. Because through wrongly steered thoughts, the human being maintains wishes, hopes, and yearnings which in no wise agree with the good and the positive, and therefore do not harmonize with them. So although we want good in our lives, we're preventing that good because we're not steering our thoughts consciously. So sometimes we have hopes and yearnings that sometimes really do not agree with what we should be yearning for. A yearning is a feeling of intense longing for something, a persistent, often melancholy desire. And you can have longing for romance or an adventure. And sometimes these longings are not entirely healthy. But our thoughts can be controlled and maintained along the right path so that at least our inner freedom and harmony is obtained and acquired. Some of the synonyms for harmony include concord, unity, peace, amity, friendship. So if we have an inner harmony, it's a good possibility that we are maintaining neutral, positive thinking. Something which is neutral is said to be between two points of view in a conflict or a disagreement. Billy talks about neutral as being balanced in a sense between the negative and the positive. Now, in 1988, in an interview with Billy, he said this about self-control. And he said that self-control one possesses must be self-evident and can only be gained through arduous self-scrutiny, where every iota of one's thoughts is kept completely safe and under control. Arduous means requiring great effort, laborious, difficult. So controlling our thoughts and making sure that they are neutral, positive takes some effort. And Billy goes on to say, one must not allow even the minutest negative vibration of thought and emotion to radiate or to be noticeable to others in any way. We must have a totally neutral, unbiased attitude toward all forms of life at all times. This must be achieved, and this much must become a second nature to us, having these neutral, positive thoughts. Well, I have another clip here that talks about the unconscious mind, and let's play this and we'll get back to our thoughts, our book, Might of the Thoughts.
Electrochemical signals going around a bunch of circuits inside your brain. There's no windows in your skull. Okay? The only way you get information in is through your sensory systems, from your memory, or from your cognition, that is, you making it up. Okay? So what these electrochemical signals see about the world are other electrochemical signals coming in from other systems that form this grand simulation of reality around us. So, you know, it's not that the world around you isn't there. It's there. But you've never lived there. Okay? You've never even been there for a visit. The only place you've ever been is inside your mind.
Every morning when we open our eyes, unconscious circuitry conjures a simulation we perceive as our world. In this great illusion, in our mind's eye, the only part we appear to operate actively is where we consciously place our attention. If this young man happens to meet the love of his life today, he will only realize it if his unconscious mind shares the same view. How exactly you brush your teeth? No. Your brain attends to such routine things without even bothering you.
So much of what goes on is automatic. We have many, many automatic processes which take place in our lives. Brushing the teeth is one example. But we have unconscious perceptions, unconscious thoughts. So it's so important that what we can be conscious and aware of, we start to try to take an effort to control. And what happens is, particularly psychically disturbed people, they can only see negative because their perceptive ability has become very limited. And be careful if you're starting to see the world in totally a negative frame, because you can fall prey to this limitation. And your thoughts will start to only move within a narrow framework. And that narrow framework can be negativity. And it's very damaging to your psyche, damaging to your physical health. So what happens is the same thoughts and themes appear again and again, and a rotation of the thoughts is practically called for. So this is something you can almost not even free yourself from. You have to be very, very careful of these rotating negative thoughts. Feelings. As I said earlier, feelings tend to grow out of thoughts. Emotions tend to be spontaneous and just completely pop up out of control. Feelings represent primary processes in life. And it's important that we don't stifle our feelings. We should let our feelings grow. Not necessarily all the time our emotions we should let grow, but let our feelings grow. They must never be forced with Gewalt, Gewalt is a German term that's even beyond violence. These feelings should never be fought and eliminated. And the difference between feelings and emotions becomes easier if you pay attention to the fact that emotions come suddenly, like lightning, surging, exciting, uncontrollable, whereby they're often only of short duration. However, feelings manifest slowly and are associated with a preceding thought process, which again is a big contrast to emotions, which typically are not preceded by a thought process. Exclusively conscious or unconscious thinking is responsible for the creation of feelings. Now again, as I repeat a lot, lower thoughts form lower feelings. Lower feelings can form lower habits, and then lower habits can form lower circumstances. And these lower circumstances can be alcoholism, it can be hate, it can be resentment, sorrow, bitterness, grief, errors in judgment, and all kinds of suffering can come from these lower thoughts. And if these lower thoughts become destructive, they will crystallize. And you'll feel confused, you'll feel exhausted, and they can run out of control. Now, what is a habit? A habit is a settled or regular tendency. If you have a habit, it's something you practice, something that's hard to give up. A habit is a routine of behavior. And unfortunately, lower thoughts can become a habit that occurs a little too unconsciously, a little too often. These habits occur unconsciously. Our consciousness determines our health. And our health is determined by means of the might of our own thoughts. The might of our thoughts is able to determine our physical well-being. And most human matters have their roots solely in the might of your own thoughts. Anxiety and fear kill thousands of human beings. Anxious thoughts have a tremendously demoralizing effect. And these wrong thoughts of every kind will shake the entire nervous system. But neutral, positive, equalized, happy and healthy thoughts will build up the resistance of your immune system. One's thinking, therefore, should not be habitual but constructive. Thoughts require pure, healthy, and positive nourishment. However, wrinkles emerge through the misuse of thoughts, through foolish thoughts, through self-created suffering, wrongly understood and wrongly expressed pride. These are things we need to watch out for. And if you do take control of your life and your control of your thoughts, then even thing like death will become something that is not a bad thing at all. It'll be like a magnificent sunset. And we prepare in our life to cross over to the realm of spiritual light. And believe me, you'll be back in the land of the physical. There is reincarnation is the normal process, the normal repeating pattern of all life. Remember, it's the spirit form that reincarnates. So it is true that every time you reincarnate, you reincarnate with a different consciousness block, a different personality, a different consciousness, a different subconsciousness, a different unconsciousness. But deep within your subconscious is the wisdom of your predecessor personalities. And your spirit form, that little bit of energy, let's call it energy, a little tiny fragment of the universal consciousness is locked in your midbrain in an area called the superior colliculus. And that superior colliculus is the area where the spirit form resides. And the spirit form is what animates every part of your body. It controls your life in many ways. You have a spiritual consciousness and you have a material consciousness. Your spirit consciousness is controlled by area called the Gemut, which controls the thoughts and the feelings of your spiritual consciousness. In your material consciousness is something called the psyche, and you have thoughts and feelings in your psyche. Your psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of your material consciousness. So let's take a real short music break, and we'll be back in about a minute. Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I'm broadcasting on Blog Talk Radio this morning. Another book that we're looking into is called The Mind of the Thoughts, one of the incredible books by Edward Albert Meyer, a humble farmer from Switzerland who has had extraterrestrial contact since the age of about 5 years old. Growing up in Bulac, Switzerland, out of the sky would come a silvery pear-shaped craft, and a man named Spoth would land his ship, lead young Edward Albert Meyer into the ship. And Spoth was Billy's first teacher. Spoth taught Billy many interesting things about something called the creation, the universal consciousness. Our religions, unfortunately, have adopted the word God, which has certain anthropomorphic ideas associated with it, for such as anger and vengeance. Wrath is mine, as a vengeance is mine, says the Lord. Well, the universal consciousness, the real creator of our universe, it radiates love. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And creation is a kind of intelligence that is different than human intelligence. Universal consciousness is neither good nor evil. It's 100% balanced. It's neutral. It doesn't really watch over you. It has no personality in that sense of the word. It's never been angry. It doesn't do anger. It doesn't do vengeance. It doesn't get involved in the wars of humanity. Now, maybe I'll flow into this a little bit in the second half of the show, because I think it relates to health and it relates to our thoughts. Because we need to evaluate whether our thoughts are correct. And one of the things that I've talked about on this show before is religion. And you may or may not know this about me, but I, in many ways, have spent a great deal of time studying the Bible and considered going down that path in my life, and taught Bible studies and things like that for years. But one of the things I like to do on this show is give you a different perspective. And I never want to force this perspective on anyone. One of the shocking things that I've learned recently is the history of the letter J, which is the youngest letter in our alphabet. The letter J didn't exist in any language on Earth, any Earth-based language, until about the 1500s. And there was a man named Gian Giorgio Tristano, who was a man that lived from 1478 to about 1550, and he was the first to explicitly distinguish I and J as representing separate sounds. So in the ancient world, I was used instead of J in most all these words, whether it's, sometimes a Y would appear, but for example, the term Jesus is relatively a new term. In the ancient world, the I sound appeared first. That's why the Meyer material says the man's name was Emmanuel. Now, some people will claim that there was a transliteration from Hebrew to Greek to Latin to English, from Yeshua to Isis to Iesus to Jesus. Now, in the old paintings, the crucifixion paintings, underneath the Christ figure, you would see the letters I-N-R-I. That first word, Iesus, was the Latin equivalent of Jesus. You notice it began with an I. There was no W, J, or U in Old English. So when the first Gutenberg Bible came out, the first 1611 King James Bible come out, none of the New Testament people or Old Testament people names began with the letter J. So Jehovah was Yehovah. The Apostle John was called Yohanan or something to that effect. The book of Job was really the book of Iob. So yes, although the religions now claim these scriptures to be the inerrant word of God, we can, with just doing a thimbleful of research, we can see that that's not the case. The letter J still does not exist in the Hebrew language either. So he was never called Jehovah. But in Numbers 31:7, Moses tells the Israelites, the army of Israel, to go in and kill all the women and children of the Midianites. But first he had them go attack the Midianites. And they killed all the soldiers and they came back. Moses was enraged. So they had to go back and kill the women and children. But they could keep the virgins for themselves. So the idea of God has been burned into our minds in a very strange way. The Meyer material claims that Jehovah or Yehovah was one of the Giza intelligences. Those people that were using religion, and you notice I said people that were using religion to try to gain control of the people of the earth. They were extraterrestrial humans. They could be traced all the way back to 11,500 years ago during the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria. And when you start to study religion, some of these things will start to pop up. And you can study how this worked. I think I will digress just briefly, hopefully, and you can listen to this clip I have on the letter J. We'll talk about this a little more, and then we'll get back on track for our study.
The letter J is roughly 500 years old and was not part of the ancient Greek, Hebrew, or Latin alphabet. By way of contrast, the ampersand, a combination of the letters E and T, is 2,000 years old. The oldest letter is O, which has been with us for 3,000 years. J descended figuratively and literally from the letter I and was used to give a consonant sound to the letter I. Consider how the letter A sounds differently depending on the word it is used in. Baby or bath, for instance. At one time, I might have been used to sound both like I or like J. Important political and religious figures whose names started with the letter I lived before the invention of the letter J. And today their names are commonly spelled with a J rather than with an I. Julius Caesar was born in approximately 100 BC, and Jesus Christ was born in approximately 5 BC. Some scholars believe that names that began with I were pronounced as if they began with Y, and pronunciations evolved over time. To some people, there are religious implications in the spelling of religious names. Of course, there are no recordings from these time periods, and scholars must rely on ancient texts for guidance. Any books written before 1600 had no J's as we know them. In 1455, Johannes Gutenberg invented movable type, which some consider humankind's greatest invention. Gutenberg's first name likely started with I because he was born before J's were used. Copies of the Gutenberg Bible still exist, and in it Job, for instance, was spelled I-O-B. Similarly, the 1611 edition of the King James Bible had no J, but 1769 editions of the King James Bible had J's. Some credit Italian playwright and scholar Gian Giorgio Cicino, who was born in 1478, for the official split of I from J. Cicino wrote that the consonant J should be a distinct letter from the vowel I. Similarly, Cicino wrote that the vowel U should be separate from the consonant V. Both ideas grew in popularity, and thus we have J's and U's.
Okay, there's a little history lesson that I certainly wasn't aware of. I know probably a lot of you were not aware of either. And I was always questioned, how in the world could we even get the wrong name of the Christ figure? In fact, his name was not Jesus because there was no letter J until the 1500s. There was no J sound either. So, and that's Emmanuel is the person's original name according to the Meyer material. And Emmanuel is said to be the one with godly knowledge. The godly knowledge meaning the Ishwish. And Emmanuel is one of the old traditional first names in what's called the Ur form, or the Ur meaning most ancient. I'm going back to the Lyrian again. In other words, it meant that Emmanuel is a very old name of the old Lyrians and or pagans, or even further back. And it's quite clear that an old name of the real and true prophet cannot be changed just because of the English language. And the English language has no importance in the spiritual teaching. The story, again, of Emmanuel is told in a book called The Talmud of Emmanuel. So I leave that up to your own study, to go back and look at The Talmud of Emmanuel. I've done some study of that book, certainly not enough. So let's talk a little bit. I segued into religion a bit. And the Meyer material talks again and again about the dangers of religion. And in page 276 of the Might of the Thoughts book, it says, in this way, belief has an extraordinarily strong hypnotic effect and leads to the following: inconsiderateness, illogic, and to fanaticism and bondage. What is belief? Belief is confidence in something that is not immediately susceptible to rigorous proof. And belief has a hypnotic effect. You know, when a person is in a state of hypnosis, their consciousness apparently loses some of the power of voluntary action. And we become highly responsive to suggestion or direction. So we need to be careful about putting ourselves in a hypnotic state. Belief is based on wrong and negative thinking and in the rejection and displacement of reality, whereby every believer is restricted in the creation of new thoughts, progressive ideas, intentions, imaginations, and wishes, and so forth. According to my own information, the person that focuses on belief becomes estranged to the real facts of life. Well, earlier I stated that belief tends to shut down logic. Now, logic is a science that investigates the principles of what's called correct and reliable inference. Logic is a study in the use of valid reasoning. One of the kinds of reasoning that logic talks about is deductive reasoning. If A, then B. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is mortal. So belief tends to shut down the function of deductive reasoning. So when you're looking at your thoughts, do not fall into belief. The human being must consciously steer his or her own life according to your innermost creational nature and according to your respect and love. Now, steer means to guide or control. Notice there isn't an angel steering you. There isn't God in the religious sense of a deity up there steering you. You're taking responsibility for your life, and you're steering your life. You have to take responsibility. Do not turn over your responsibility to religion. There's a lot of strangeness that goes on today in religion. I think I have some clips. I don't know if they're particularly superb clips. If I can find them here quickly, I may not be able to find any. But there, I do have some clips that I've made on various religious leaders that have come into power today, and particularly the ones that are televangelists that make millions of dollars off of their congregations. This may not be a particularly good one, but let's go ahead and play this clip on, it's called Crazy TV Preachers. I think I'm running a little close on time here, but I'll go ahead and start this clip.
sacrilegious TV. We propelled. Birds propel. Eagles don't propel. We said, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God.
I love religious TV.
What fools the nations are to rage against the Lord.
I'm a channel surfing religious TV couch potato fool. I once sat in a motel room in Meridian, Mississippi watching a Pentecostal revival meeting that lasted 3.5 hours and they didn't even use snakes.
Your sins have to pop out somewhere. Little children have acne. Why? I can tell you why. What little boys do in the bedroom at night. It's a natural process of the fallen creature, what he does in the bedroom at night. You tie his hands. The Catholics used to tie their hands. Tie the girl's hand. Wouldn't do any good. Tie them all you want. Because it's in their nature. It's the fallen nature, what they do in the bedroom at night.
Anyway, this is kind of a crazy clip. I like to play bits and pieces of it sometimes just to kind of remind us. I know they're extremely exaggerated examples. But we have to be aware that it's our responsibility to steer our own ideas, our own thoughts, our own feelings. And the human being must learn not to be submissive. Now, this is something that the Meyer material teaches too. Submission means to be ready to conform to the authority and the will of others. Submissive also means to be ready to yield unresistingly or be humbly obedient. Let's listen to what Billy has to say here. Therefore, also never lapse into submissiveness with regard to a human, regardless of however and whatever he may pretend to be. But also never thus become a submissive slave to an imaginary deity or angels or saints or anything else. Never practice submissiveness with regard to yourself, but always be open and honest, as well as forceful to yourself in regard to yourself as a human, which you truly are, and who governs himself in every respect. Even if you're in chains, don't be submissive. And I think the issue here is not being submissive. You know, we should govern every aspect of ourselves. And to govern means to rule over. We rule over ourselves. We need to take responsibility. We need to be directing ourselves. Now, to lapse means a temporary failure in concentration and memory and judgment. And when you're lapsing, you're gradually moving into an inferior state, an inferior condition to what you currently are in. And the human being must consider it his or her duty to take control of your life. And how do we take control of our life? By neutral positive thinking. Because neutral positive thoughts will lead to positive healthy feelings, which will lead to positive and healthy habits, which will lead to positive and healthy circumstances in your own life. You are the ruler of your own life. Through the might of your own thoughts, you can accomplish anything that you want. The power of our own thoughts is staggering. It's something we haven't really learned about yet here on the earth. So, hopefully this book is one of those books that is beneficial to all of us, and we can focus on learning the power of our own thoughts. And I certainly appreciate you being with me this afternoon. I hope this little bit of information will help you in your daily life, all the folks that are listening around the world. Remember, we'll be on freedomslips.com tonight, Studio B, 8 p.m. Eastern. I got a couple good guests. I'll let you find out who they are. They'll be there shortly. I'd like to thank all of you for listening, and let's go out with a little bit of music here. This is called Sea of Glass.